Welcome to Blue Dot, a look at our place in space. I'm Dave Schloem. It's always difficult when you make a claim that something is the greatest ever. There's always subjectivity involved. But to me, as someone who cares deeply about the planet we live on, and to many others, including the editors of Life magazine, one of the greatest photographs ever taken is Earthrise. It's the iconic view of the blue Earth with its swirling clouds rising above the barren moon, taken during the historic Apollo 8 mission in December of 1968. It was the first time that humans left Earth orbit and went to the moon, and the sight of the Earth from the moon dazzled astronauts Frank Borman, Jim Lovell, and William Anders. For years, there was some mild controversy over who actually took the photograph, but we now know that it was Anders. Bill Anders passed away on June 7th at the age of 90 while flying a vintage T-34 training plane that was registered to him. Later on in the program, we'll take a look back at the career of the man who took the Earthrise photograph and find out about what he was like with two of his friends, Apollo 16 astronaut Brigadier General Charles Duke and retired NASA flight director Jerry Griffin. Jerry is a good friend of the show and told me that he proudly hangs a print of Earthrise signed by the Apollo 8 astronauts in his bedroom. Duke, the 10th man to walk on the moon, was neighbors with the Anders family back during the Apollo program and maintained a close relationship with his friend throughout his life. But first, we're joined by Apollo historian and author of the seminal book, A Man on the Moon, Andrew Chaikin. It was Andy who did some incredible detective work to once and for all settle which one of the astronauts actually took the Earthrise photograph. Bill Anders. For years, it was a matter of official record that Commander Frank Borman took the photograph, but Anders recalled that he took the photo. We'll find out the entire story about that right now as Andy joins us. Andy Chaikin, welcome once again to Blue Dot.
Thank you, Dave. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, we're of course talking about the loss of Bill Anders recently, and you know, he took the iconic photograph Earthrise, and we kind of want to make the photograph the central point of our discussion with you. So I'd like to take you back to, do you remember, what are some of your memories like of that Christmas Eve when you first saw those televised images? And then when do you remember the first time you saw the actual photograph after the mission?
Absolutely. And that was truly a magical time for me. You know, I was already a space fanatic, age 12, and was glued to the TV like I had been for so many of the previous space events. Although I think Apollo 8 was different. It happened while we were all on Christmas vacation, so I could literally camp out in front of the TV for the first time with my, you know, maps of the moon and issues of Time and Newsweek. And, you know, I had my own little mission control in the den, and I was doing everything I could to feel like I was part of this incredible adventure. And the highlight for me, and I think for so many people, were these incredible TV transmissions that were sent from Apollo 8 to us, to the Earth, during the trip out to the moon, and then again while they were in lunar orbit. And of course, the spine-tinglingly wonderful broadcast on Christmas Eve itself from lunar orbit, which included the reading from Genesis. Of course, I was a little young at 12 to really grasp the full impact of it, but just from a space geek point of view, it was just as exciting as it ever gets. It was just an amazing adventure to be able to follow as it unfolded.
And then do you remember the first time you saw the photograph?
Well, I can tell you as a historian, I kind of came to realize this later on in looking back, that it was printed on the front page of the New York Times the day after it was released. And since we lived in the New York area on Long Island, and we got the New York Times every day, you know, that was the first time I saw that picture. And then, of course, it wasn't too long at all before it was on the cover of Newsweek and was in color, in full color, and inside the pages of Time. And yeah, it was an amazing thing to see. It was the Earth as an astronomical object, right? in this black sky, a planet, not a vista like it is from Earth orbit, albeit a spectacularly beautiful vista, but a world, and a world that was suddenly very finite and very precious. And again, I don't think I took that in at age 12, but the power of that photo has not diminished one tiny bit. And I think that speaks to, you know, it occurs to me that Neil Armstrong's famous quote on stepping on the moon several months later, you know, in July of the following year, that's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. This picture, this Earthrise picture, is the embodiment of that giant leap. It is the moment at which humanity left to the vicinity of its home planet and looked back at that planet as, you know, in Jim Lovell's words, an oasis in the vastness of space.
Let's talk a little bit about the man who took that photograph, and we'll get to the story of how we know that it's him. But, you know, we recently lost William Bill Anders in a plane crash flying his airplane. And I just, you know, curious, you know, what were your initial thoughts when you heard that news?
Well, it was sad and shocking news. You know, Bill was 90 years old and had a good long run, but I was always aware, like I am with all these guys, that any of them who are still with us, we feel it's so precious to have them with us, and we know it's not going to last forever. But I don't think anybody expected that. And, you know, he was a great pilot. And I think I console myself, and I think a lot of people must, with the fact that he was doing what he loved when he died. He was flying one of his planes. And, you know, it was sad and shocking, but I really feel the most sorrow for his family. I just think it must be a very, very difficult time for them.
Yes, I agree with everything you just said. I think best to go out doing something you love is all I got to say.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about him, because you got to know him pretty well when you were doing your interviews, your extensive interviews with all of the living astronauts at that time for your book, A Man on the Moon. Tell us about, you know, what he was like when you were interviewing him and you got to know him as a person. What was Bill Anders like for you?
Well, I would have to say that Bill was right up there with the most fun, the most interesting, the most satisfying interviews of all of the interviews I did for Man on the Moon. And I did talk to 23 out of the 24 lunar astronauts. The only one I didn't get to was Jack Swigert from Apollo 13, who'd already passed away. But Bill really was kind of a watershed for me, because he was such a fabulous storyteller. And I sat down with him several times, usually for a couple of hours at a stretch. And he took me through his experiences, and it was so rich, and it was so often so funny. I mean, he just had me in stitches sometimes. For example, the episode when Frank Borman got sick, and I'll leave it to your imagination what Bill talked about, but it's in my book, what that created in the cabin of Apollo 8 on the way to the moon. And, you know, it was just his thoughts about the flight, the launch. He said the launch on the Saturn V, you know, they were the first people ever to ride the Saturn V. And Bill said that when they rose off the launch pad and the engines on the bottom of the first stage were making little corrections to the flight path, swiveling back and forth, that up in the command module, he felt like a rat in the jaws of a giant terrier being shaken within an inch of his life. You know, it was pretty harrowing there for a minute or so. Things like that, you know, the experience of, he talked about the experience of looking out the window as they left the Earth after the translunar injection maneuver and seeing the Earth with, you know, as a planet, but really he couldn't figure out what he was looking at, because it would, as he finally realized, it was upside down. It didn't look like the schoolroom globe, you know, and he actually spun himself around 180 degrees in front of the window so he could recognize what he was seeing. It was things like that that just made me feel like, oh man, this is really going to help me tell this story with a new level of richness and detail.
Okay, let's get back to the photograph, Earthrise, because up until you talked to Bill Anders and did these interviews, there was kind of a, I don't know how to put it, a convoluted story about who actually took this photograph. Was it Frank Borman? He often said he did. So could you kind of walk us through who did we think took the photograph before you started doing your research?
Well, sure. And actually, I would say that it wasn't very convoluted at all before I stepped in to the scene, because the world really took Frank Borman's version as the official version. Frank claimed, you know, on the pages of Life magazine shortly after the flight in his account in Life magazine that he saw the Earth come up. He said to Bill Anders to take the picture. You know, he tried to get the camera to take it, and Anders didn't want to give him the camera, and he finally had to grab it away from him and take the picture. And that was in print in, you know, Life magazine, which, you know, millions and millions of people read. And as far as anybody knew, that was the story. And compounding it, you see, was the fact that NASA's transcript had Frank saying, oh my God, look at that picture over there. Wow, is that pretty? It's the Earth coming up. And then according to the NASA transcript, it was Bill who said, don't take that, it's not scheduled. And, you know, Frank must have looked at that and said, see, Anders didn't want to give me the camera and he's so rigid, he's sticking to his photo plan. He doesn't even want to take this picture of the Earth for us. So that's all anybody knew.
And then you decide to go to the source itself, and you found the actual audio, didn't you?
Well, I did, but I didn't even know I needed it until I had interviewed Bill. You see, in the summer of 1987, I sat down with Bill, and when we got to the Earthrise picture, he told me about how frustrating it was for him that Frank had always been declared the author of the photo. And he said that Jim Lovell had even started to, as a joke, claim that he took it. But Bill was really pretty sure, I should say, that he had taken it. And he even had reached out to a NASA astronaut photography expert named Dick Underwood. And Dick said, yeah, I think you took it. So I came away from that thinking, man, as a historian, I gotta settle this. I've gotta find out what really happened. So I knew it was on the onboard voice tapes because it was in the transcript. I reached out to the NASA Johnson Space Center audio archive. They sent me a cassette of that tape, and instantly I knew it was Bill Anders who had seen the Earth come up and say, wow, is that pretty? It's the Earth coming up. Look at that picture over there. And it was Frank who said, don't take that. It's not scheduled. And I could hear a little bit of laughter. I knew Frank was teasing Bill because earlier in the tape, you could hear when they first get into lunar orbit, Frank wants to take a tourist photo. And Bill says, wait a second. Let me get squared away here. And Frank says, I just want to take a picture. So it all made sense once you heard the tape, and I realized that the NASA transcript was not correct. It was in error. And so I told Bill, guess what? The tape shows that you really took the picture.
Let's have our producer, Matt Fidler, play that for us right now so we can hear it as you did back then.
Oh my God, look at that picture over there. There's the Earth coming up. Wow, is that pretty. Hey, don't take that. It's not scheduled. You got a color film, Jim? Hand me a roll of color, quick.
Oh, man, that's great. Where is it?
Quick.
Hey, I've got it right here.
Let me get out this way. A lot clearer.
Bill, I got it framed. It's very clear right here.
You got it?
Yep.
Just take several of them.
Take several of them. Here, give it to me.
Wait a minute. Let me get the right setting here. Calm down, Lovell.
Oh, I got it right. Oh, that's a beautiful shot. 250 at F11. Now, there's explosion.
I did. I picked you up.
You sure you got it now?
Yeah, it'll come up again, I think.
It's so great because I know those voices, and you know those voices very well. You can tell who's saying what.
You really can. I mean, there was no ambiguity anymore once you heard the tape. And I want to point out something that I think your listeners will be able to hear, because I could hear it just now. You can actually hear the click of the camera and the motor drive on the Hasselblad camera that Bill was using. And if you listen closely, you go back, he took a picture before Lovell gave him the color film, right after he saw the Earth rising. He took a picture with the same 250-millimeter lens that he'd been using to photograph craters on the moon. But that black and white picture with the Earth just above the horizon was actually the first Earthrise picture. Then later, when Lovell gave him the color film, he snapped two color photos, one of which became the one that we all know. But, you know, as a storyteller, my God, what an incredible record of a human moment, right? A moment of three very three-dimensional people in an incredible moment of exploration and discovery. It really almost unique in anything I can think of in the way of that kind of document.
I may not get your words exactly right, but you described it beautifully in the book as it's the most electrifying moments are the ones that take us by surprise. They were not expecting. That was not in the flight plan to take that picture. That was not something that was like in their consciousness at the time. It took them by surprise. And that's the beauty, the serendipitousness of it.
Yes, absolutely. And in fact, Bill specifically said that to me. He said it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. And he said, we had been so focused on getting to the moon that I wasn't even thinking about what it would be like to look back at the Earth. And so you're exactly right.
And for many years after, he talked about how moving it was, and how small and beautiful the Earth was. And because they were there on Christmas Eve, he'd often describe it as, you know, seeing a beautiful glass Christmas ornament on a tree way across the room from you. And that, you know, it just looks so fragile and gorgeous.
Yeah. And I think it's no accident. And I'm not the one who thought this up, but it's been said by many people that it's no accident that the first Earth Day happened not too terribly long after that picture became part of the public consciousness.
We're going to take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Apollo historian Andrew Chaikin as we look back at the life and career of Apollo 8 astronaut William Anders, the man who took the iconic photograph Earthrise. I'm Dave Shloom, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening to Blue Dot as we continue our conversation with Apollo historian Andrew Chaikin. Andy and I are talking about the iconic Earthrise photograph, taken on Christmas Eve in 1968 by Apollo 8 astronaut William Anders. Anders passed away on June 7th in a plane crash while flying his vintage T-34 trainer near Orcas Island in Washington State. Let's go farther forward, because you were involved in a really fascinating, cool recreation of this using imaging and mapping from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter mission. Could you walk us through that story a little bit? Because that is really cool. And we'll put a link on our webpage for people that want to watch that video, because it's really fascinating.
Yes, it was a really great part of this whole detective story for me. So flash forward to 2012. And by this time, you know, my book had been out for many, many years. I had thought, you know, even Frank Borman had come around, you know, very readily. I was the one that told Frank he didn't take the picture. And Frank was, you know, initially he said, oh, I'm not changing my story. It's a good story. It just shows how foresighted Anders was on the photo plan and all that. But he actually publicly said at their reunion, their 20th reunion, that Anders took the photo, not him. And I thought it was settled. But I kept seeing things come out. Like there was a book about Apollo 8 that came out that said Frank took the picture. And, you know, some versions of it had it that Frank took the black and white, but Bill took the color. Well, the fact is Frank didn't like the 250 millimeter lens, and Bill was the one who was using it while Frank was flying the spacecraft. And it just all fit together. And it kind of annoyed me that it was still an open question. Then the thing that really made me nuts was that Bill started saying maybe Frank took the first picture, the black and white, and that maybe he'd only taken the color. And I thought, come on, Bill, you know better than that. But so 2012, I was at the Goddard Space Flight Center, the NASA Goddard Space Flight Center in Greenbelt, Maryland, and I met a fellow named Ernie Wright, who is part of the Scientific Visualization Studio there, a wonderful group who create amazing visualizations of spacecraft data, which are all available to the public. In fact, I suggest that listeners check out their website. So Ernie was embarking on, with an eye towards the 45th anniversary of Apollo 8 in December of 2013, he was starting to lay the groundwork for recreating the Earthrise. And he had at his disposal phenomenal topographic data from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter that allowed him to recreate the terrain that the astronauts were flying over. So he could not only, you know, for example, create a still image, but an actual video of what they had seen as they were flying over the far side of the moon, and then the Earth coming up beyond the horizon. And he even also tracked down satellite data on what the weather patterns were, and he recreated that. And it was an amazing thing. But as to the question of who had taken the Earthrise photo, Ernie was a little bit unsure of what he thought, what he believed. When I met him and I heard about this project, I pointed out the fact that Borman had been flying the spacecraft right before Bill made his oh my God, look at that picture over there comment. I talked about the 250 millimeter lens that Bill was using that was also used for all of those three Earthrise photos. And Ernie started to come around, and he did some research, and he went to a website called the Apollo Flight Journal, a really great website. And the part of the journal for Apollo 8 showed that while Bill was seeing the Earthrise, there was another Hasselblad camera in another window, and it was on a timer, automatic timer, taking pictures of the moon. The thing that I had not understood was that the spacecraft was pointed nose down during this time. I never would have thought that. I always thought they were, you know, flying parallel to the horizon. No, they were nose down. This camera was then in the rendezvous window, pointed downwards, taking pictures of the moon. And when Ernie went through those photos and mapped them onto his Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter data, topographic data, he was able to show conclusively what the orientation of the spacecraft was. Not only were they pointed down, but Bill's side window, was the only window that you could see the Earth through when it first came up. And you had to have your nose practically up to the glass to see it. So this was something that could only have been done convincingly with 21st century technology and with the quality of the data that Ernie was able to access from the Lunar Reconnaissance Orbiter. So Ernie really provided the evidence that was incontrovertible. And he also was able to get the audio cleaned up a little bit so that you could more easily hear those shutter clicks, and that fit the scenario as well. And he put it all together and asked me to narrate it, and it went up on NASA's website. And by the way, Ernie had to navigate the warning from somebody at NASA headquarters who said, before you call Frank Borman a liar, which is exactly what you'll be doing with this, you better make sure you have an ironclad case. And Ernie responded,
No pressure there.
Right. But, you know, Ernie had a very good response. He said, I don't think anybody lied. I think they were three tired people with a lot to do and a lot going on. And it's completely understandable that, you know, he didn't put it this way, but it's sort of like the fog of war. It's a complete, again, it's a human event. This is what I love about this, Dave. These events are monumental. You can't get more monumental in the scope of human history than the first time humans leave Earth and go to orbit another world, to orbit the moon. But this is a human event, and the details just bring that across so vividly. It's just really, I've always said that as a writer, as a storyteller, Apollo 8 is pretty much my favorite story in the whole arc of Apollo.
You got the truth out. We know Bill Anders took the photo, and Frank was the commander and still had a good sense of humor about the whole thing. And it's just such a magnificent photograph. You know, when I think about the pale blue dot image that Carl Sagan crusaded with NASA to get them to take, you know, before they turned off the cameras on the Voyager spacecraft, on Voyager 1, let's take some pictures of the planets from that distant vantage point. And a lot of them thought there was no scientific purpose to that. But then, you know, the image came back, this tiny, you know, pixel, tiny blue dot that, you know, our show is named after. You know, it's a change in consciousness when you think about that and his famous speech. But, you know, I when I think of that image, I think of, well, that image is like the grandchild of Earthrise.
Yes, absolutely. It's powers of 10. Isn't it? I mean, you carry with you the consciousness of what the Earth looks like down here, vicariously then through the astronauts' photographs, through Bill's Earthrise photo, you begin to absorb the impact of seeing the Earth as a planet, but still close enough that you can see surface features. And then, you know, by the time you get out to Mars, the pictures from the Opportunity rover and so forth, it's just a point of light. And then Carl's blue dot picture from Voyager, Carl and Carolyn Porco, who was also right in there making that happen. It's another power of 10 leap. And yet we've barely left home. And Bill even commented on that in our conversation. You know, he said, looking at the Earth to us on board the spacecraft, it was everything. But if you think about it on the scale of the galaxy, it's a dust mote. It's nothing. And that duality is also part of what it means to be a human being in an endless universe.
Yeah, and I loved what Jim Lovell said about it that Christmas Eve night, that it really is this grand oasis in the vast loneliness of space.
The only color that they could see, that's what Frank kept saying. The only color in the universe.
Well, Andy Chaikin, thanks so much for, you know, sharing the detective story of how we found out that Bill Anders truly did take the iconic Earthrise photograph, and for your great memories of him. You know, and it's just very sad, his recent passing, but it's great to honor him this way. So thank you for doing this.
Well, I really appreciate, Dave, that you had the thought to have me, and I'm grateful for the chance to do this.
Thanks to our guest, Apollo historian and author of A Man on the Moon, Andrew Chaikin. Now let's turn our attention to the life and career of the man who took the Earthrise photograph with two men who knew William Anders very well. We're joined once again by my good friend, retired NASA flight director Jerry Griffin, and joining him is Brigadier General Charles Duke. Charlie was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 16 and the 10th man to walk on the moon. General Duke and Jerry, welcome once again to Blue Dot.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Glad to be with you again.
Well, and we are here to talk about something that's kind of sad. It's the loss of your good friend and colleague, William Bill Anders, who was the lunar module pilot on Apollo 8. Of course, it had no lunar module, but he took the what I consider the greatest photograph of all time, Earthrise, and we'll talk about that later. But the first thing I'd like to ask you, I'll start with you, General. What were your thoughts when you initially heard that Bill had crashed his plane and passed?
Utterly shocked, couldn't believe it. He was a great pilot, but he was 90 years old. And so I don't know, I haven't seen any accident report, but I did see a video of him attempting a loop or something anyway, in his T-34. And I was just shocked. He used to fly Reno Air Races in the unlimited category. And he was just a good pilot, good friend. We were next door neighbors while they were at NASA.
Wow. Yeah, no, unquestionably, he was a fantastic pilot. And same to you, Jerry, what were your initial thoughts?
Well, very, very much like Charlie's, it was kind of a shock, mainly because I had known him. I met him in a fighter squadron before there was a NASA even. And as Charlie said, he was a great pilot, great stick. I thought he was 90. Yeah, I knew he was 90 years old, but I never thought he'd be killed in an airplane crash. He was just too good. And I flew with him a lot in the back seat. And so I got to watch him close. So it's just a big shock and kind of disbelief.
And I remember talking to you, Jerry, about Bill Anders' P-51, the iconic Mustang, one of the greatest planes of all time that helped win World War II for the United States and the Allies. And could you talk a little bit about, that plane and his love for it?
Yeah, that airplane was really nice. And one day I'm sitting in my office and he calls and he says, "You want to fly in a P-51? And I said, "Yeah." And he said, "Well, get down to Uvalde, Texas, because my airplane's just coming out of the paint shop, and we'll take a hop." It was one of those that had a modified rear seat in it. So I said, "Okay." My wife took me down to Uvalde and dropped me off. And then he flew back here and spent the night with us and went from there. But boy, that airplane was something else, and beautiful job they had done on it and the restoration and all. And it was named Valhalla after his wife, Valerie, and quite an airplane. We never got over about 700 feet off the ground at about 400 knots and or 350. And it was a hoot.
Wow. Well, Charlie, I'd like to ask you, do you remember like the first time you met Bill Anders and, what it was like getting to know him back in the beginning when you were first selected as an astronaut or even before that?
Yeah, well, I don't remember our first encounter at the astronaut office, but when we got there, we were looking for a place to build a house, and we were on Lakeshore Drive in El Lago. And we went by and I said, "Well, that's Bill Anders' house." And there was a vacant lot next door. So we knocked on the door, if I recall, and he and Val met us and they said, "Well, this great lot and it backs up to a cul-de-sac and our kids have a great time here and it's vacant lots across the street." So we made an offer and bought the lot. And then he gave us, just some family advice and just helped a lot when we were building a house. And so he and Val became really good, close friends.
Let's take a short break, but stay with us. When we return, we'll continue our conversation with Apollo 16 astronaut Brigadier General Charles Duke and retired NASA Flight Director Jerry Griffin as we look back at the life of Apollo 8 astronaut William Anders. Anders took the iconic Earthrise photograph on Christmas Eve of 1968. He recently passed away in a plane crash at the age of 90. I'm Dave Shloem, and you are listening to Blue Dot. And we're back, and thanks for listening. Let's return now to our conversation with Apollo 16 astronaut Charles Duke and Apollo flight director Jerry Griffin as we look back at the life and career of Apollo 8 astronaut William Anders, who took one of the greatest photographs of all time, Earthrise. Jerry, you want to tell us a bit about his, you know, his heritage flight and the amazing planes he had?
Yeah, he they had T-6s. He's got a, there's an AD Sky Raider out there. That's a big airplane that we used quite a bit in Vietnam. He had a Czechoslovakian L-39, sold it because it is a piece of junk. Anyway, and then they got these three T-34s, and they got a number of airplanes on static display that don't fly like the F-89. And I actually found an F-101 that he and I flew in together in the Air Force, and it was pretty derelict, and he couldn't, he said that one was too far. That was down in San Antonio. But his love of flying was throughout.
He was the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, too.
Yeah. That was later, though. That and that whole time, he was still flying T-38s. He would go down. He would go down to Langley Field from Washington and fly the T-38. They would park one up there for him, and he'd go fly it. He's officially all that time in Washington and that early stuff. He stayed on astronaut duty somehow. I don't know how he did it. Charlie might. No.
Let me shift gears a little bit on to Apollo 8. You know, we were in a race to the with the Russians. And Apollo 8 was not supposed to go to the moon, but I think the management said, well, we got some rumors or something, and we'd like you guys to go to the moon. And all three of them said, yeah, we'll go. And to me, that was, at the time, was probably the riskiest mission that NASA had ever flown. And I'm not sure it's not still the riskiest mission that NASA's ever flown. It was the first time anybody had been on a Saturn V with people. It was only the second time the command module had been flown. And when they launched to the outer Earth orbit, they were on their own, and it had to work or they're dead men.
And they had no lunar module like what happened on Apollo 13 with that crew.
Right.
Yeah, no back anything. Then he takes it, they get there, and it takes this tremendous picture of the Earth. And I think one of the most moving memories that I have of that flight was on Christmas Eve when they turned on the TV and the Earth rise, and they started reading from Genesis, the first 11 verses. And except for Neil Armstrong's One Small Step, I think that was probably the most moving transmission from the moon ever.
Well, that's well said, and it's something that I've always admired and thought about, and for my own self personally, and I've told Jerry this many times, Apollo 8, you know, people ask me all the time, what's, you know, as an Apollo historian, what's your favorite mission? Is it Apollo 11 or 13 or whatever? It's to me, it's Apollo 8. That moment impacted me so much as a kid that for the rest of my life, every Christmas Eve, I think about that mission and that moment that you described. Jerry, do you remember, you know, what it was like for you watching that transmission from the moon on Christmas Eve, 1968?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well, and to back up just one step before that, when Charlie talks about it being risky, the final flight test that just happened right before that of the Saturn V, they had a shutdown of an engine due to Pogo on the second stage, and they got into orbit and the S4B didn't restart. So with no other flights in between, the program people, primarily George Lowe, listened to Marshall's explanation of what had happened and that they had fixes for both of those, and he bought it. And they went on their way to the moon. So you talk about a gutsy call with the flight right before it having two failures in the launch vehicle. But then they get into orbit, and then that what Charlie talks about and you talk about, Dave, on the Christmas Eve, we were almost spellbound by what they did in reading from Genesis. So you could have heard a pin drop in Mission Control. There was not another sound. Yeah, that was huge.
Yeah.
And I think it got us started right.
I remember Glenn Lunny telling me that moment in Mission Control in Moker, it literally felt like being in a cathedral. Yep. During that moment.
Well, I was home listening to it, and it was real small children and Dottie, and we were just spellbound with that.
Yeah.
TV. What a moment. And I still remember, I don't know who made the decision to do Genesis, but I probably Frank, but I'm not sure. And anyway, they did it. And, you know, they raised a lot of, not a lot, but a lot of some opposition. There was a gal named Madeline Murray O'Hara back then who was a, hey, they are in government quarters and government places, and they're not supposed to be talking about religion. And
she went crazy. You went wild. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're a very deeply religious person, Charlie, and as someone who's not as deeply religious as you are, I think it was one of the most appropriate and wonderful things I've ever experienced in my life.
Well, I just love the Lord, and I don't consider myself deeply religious, but I do consider myself a believer, and my life has changed through that that experience I had back in 78, and my wife had a similar experience in 75, and so we put Jesus first, and we started working on our marriage, and God is blessed over the years. So I appreciate everything that God has done in our lives and how he's blessed us in many, many ways.
That's awesome. Okay, let's talk about the photograph, Earthrise, which I consider the greatest photograph ever taken. It's just so impactful. Do you remember when you first saw the actual image, you know, where they had, you know, made it look good with the color and all that? Do you, I'll start with you, Jerry. Do you remember the first moment you saw that photograph?
I don't remember it. Of course, it was after they got back because the film had to be developed. And, but immediately, you know, of course we had heard them talking about it. So we knew it must be some kind of sight. And I can remember the first time I saw it as, wow. Now they saw it several times after that, but that first time when you saw that had to be, you could hear Bill saying, hurry, hurry, Lovell, get me some color film. He was trying to change get a color film in the Hasselblad. But I really do think the first time I saw it, it was just so pretty. And beautiful. And I've had a copy of it for all the time. I've been where I can see one in my office. Now I've got one in my master bedroom about the size of, it's big, it's huge. And so it's my favorite photograph.
What about you, Charlie? What does that photograph mean to you?
Well, it was incredibly beautiful. And now, when I think about that photograph and I look at it, what comes to me is a Bible verse. In the Old Testament, it says, when God made the earth, he suspended it upon nothing. And that's exactly what it looks like. And the colors were so vivid. I remember, in a TV back in those days, it was sort of a grainy TV.
Yeah.
So you could see it out the window through the TV camera, but it was not like the photograph that's been developed and developed after the flight. So it's a very vivid memory, probably not quite as vivid as the memory I had when we came back around from the backside for the first time in lunar orbit, and we had our first Earthrise. To be honest, what my thought was, we're a long way from home. I hope this place holds together.
Charlie, it's really wonderful to talk to you about it, to think that you're one of the few people that, you know, I can talk to, one of the only people I can talk to, that have seen that scene for yourself with your own warm, moist eyeballs. That's just amazing.
Thank you very much. It was amazing. I was so fortunate to fly Apollo 16 with John Young as commander. We had a great crew. We were supposed to fly with Jack Swigert, but then you remember I caught the measles on Apollo 13, and
right.
Jack went into prime crew on 13, which I thought was amazing that they got off on schedule. And I think Slayton and others says, Jim, you got a week. If you're not ready to go, we go cancel. But Jim said, we're ready to go. And that, to me, that was a testament to the similarity of training for the backup and prime crew, where one could take the other's place and continue on.
Final thoughts. What are some of your favorite things, Charlie, about your late friend, Bill Anders?
Well, I thought he was a competent astronaut, I'd say an outstanding pilot. At NASA, T-38s and T-33s when he was there, and then he went on to excel in the air races at Reno. And I just remember him as a great neighbor, and Val also. We didn't do much as families because our kids were different ages, but they were always there, and we were always there for them until they moved out, of course. But it was a great family, man. And they were a great couple and great parents and loved one another. And it was just, you know, just sweet, sweet people.
Jerry?
When I first met him in the fighter squadron in 58, I went home and I told my wife, Sandy, at the time, I said, there's something special about this guy. I didn't know he's going to be an astronaut, but I said, he's going to do something different. He's different than the regular cut. And sure enough, later we had no idea there was going to be a NASA, we had no idea we were going to collide again at NASA. He kept doing things that intertwined us. And, you know, Charlie, the other thing that I really liked about that family is Valerie was totally unflappable. She was so calm, and she was pregnant with Diana when I was staying with him in Washington, and she just cool as a cucumber. And Bill, of course, was dashing around trying to make the world change, and she was just cool. She was really neat. And so anyhow, I'll always have fond memories of him. He was special. I kind of, you know, there's some guys like him that I've met over the years, like Neil Armstrong was special. He was different, a little different. Charlie Duke will always be special with me.
Thank you.
And I'm serious. And you made space easy to understand for the people that you talk to after the mission. That's what I think your great strength has been. And besides that, you finally got a chance to get out of the control center as Capcom and go do it.
Yeah.
And so anyway, there's some special people that I'll never forget. I'm about to turn 90. And so we're all getting at that age where you got to remember those things.
Yeah.
Well, my favorite Bill Anders photo is a picture of him. It's a picture of him getting out of a P-51, and it's his son Greg hosing him down with a fire hose, which
I guess is a
cool tradition. I thought that was just a wonderful photograph.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Duke, Apollo 16 astronaut, and Jerry Griffin, Apollo flight director, and both close dear friends of the late great William Bill Anders, who took the famous iconic Earthrise photograph. Thank you for sharing your memories of this great person and your friend with us.
Glad to do it.
Well, thank you very much for the opportunity, Dave. We appreciate it very much.
Thanks again to our guests, space historian Andrew Chaikin, Apollo 16 astronaut Brigadier General Charles Duke, and our longtime friend, retired NASA Flight Director Jerry Griffin. While pondering the significance of Earthrise, which I personally feel is the most important photograph ever taken, I recalled that one of my favorite photographers, mountaineer and nature photographer Galen Rowell, once said that Earthrise is the most important environmental photograph ever taken. Ironically, Rowell and his wife Barbara also died in a plane crash while on their way home to Bishop, California in 2002. We want to send our condolences to all of William Anders' family and friends, and it's fitting to note that on the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 8 mission in 2018, the International Astronomical Union renamed two of the craters that are visible in the Earthrise photograph, 8 Homeward and Anders Earthrise. A tribute indeed to one of the most historic adventures of all time and the man who took the great photograph. Blue Dot is a production of North State Public Radio, a service of Cap Radio in beautiful and talented Northern California. We're distributed by PRX. If you want to revisit, share, or check out past episodes, you can do just that on our website, mynspr.org. And while you're at it, subscribe to our podcast so you never miss an episode on our website, the NPR One app, or wherever you get your podcast groove on. Our theme music, Big Wave Dave, is by Matt Schultz. Blue Dot is engineered and produced by the maestro, Matt Fidler. For all of us here, I remind you there that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.